Michelle is not moving chair at all. We are now going to talk about the review of ASAF, and obviously that this is important, and you know, to get our feedback on the key consultation questions. You've seen what those are. The scope of the review has been very, very focused around whether or not to incorporate as a statutory body. And we certainly, for those of you who were around the last time with the review, the Advisory Council certainly considered that, and I would certainly say, and it's very obvious how we have morphed. You know, we were the, I guess I'm putting a bias on this before we even start, that you know, we were the technical and strategic advice committee before, and we were part of the constitution. Now we're just the strategic advice committee, so arguably there is a role for a technical committee to be in the constitution. Sorry, I've given my bias away in terms of where I sit on this. So having said that, I think I better shut up and leave Michelle and Sam to carry the day. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you very much. So moving from the Emerging Economies Group, we're going to, as Joe said, go through where we are with the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum. I want to just first of all take a minute to introduce Sam, who has joined the NSS team of one, so that we became an NSS team of two. And the reason, apart from being charmed by me, obviously, that he wanted to come and work, was because we have also taken on this year the maintenance of the jurisdiction profiles. So we are, well, I think probably Sam is, the new Paul Pachter. So as part of his work...
That is something to look
back to. Yeah, it's possible. I felt a bit mean saying that, really. So, returning to the ASAF review, this is one of the areas that Sam is helping me with. So what we want to do is provide you just a bit of background to the review, give you an update on where we are, and then, as Joe said, ask your input on two of the questions that were really carried forward from the 2015 ASAF review. So ASAF was formed in 2013. Following the strategy review, the trustees recommended that the board bring together a network for maintaining our relationships with national standard setters. The board did a public consultation at the end of 2012, a call for nominations in 2013, and the first ASAF meeting took place shortly thereafter. In terms of membership, there are 12 non-voting members of the ASAF, and those members represent their national standard setting body. The members are required to have technical expertise and the experience and practical knowledge so that they can meaningfully contribute to the ASAF discussions and provide us with the board with reliable and relevant advice. The trustees appoint the members, and at the moment the agreed split is one from Africa, three from the Americas, three from Asia, Oceania and Europe, and then two from at large. So on the slide is the current membership of ASAF. So currently ASAF is organised. It has two constitutional documents, the Memorandum of Understanding, which all of the members sign when they are appointed. So we've now had two Memorandums of Understanding, the 2013 and then a new one in 2015. The memorandum sets out the objectives of the ASAF and the commitments that the ASAF members make to the ISB when joining the group, and likewise the commitments that we make to the ASAF members regarding providing adequate technical resource to support the group. And then the terms of reference is much more operational, but the important point that it includes in it is that all aspects of ASAF and its operations are reviewed every 3 years. So the first set of terms of reference said 2 years, and managed to persuade the trustees to move it to 3 years. So it's a bit like Groundhog Day because this is round two. We published the first review in 2015. It was quite a wide-scoped review because the formation of ASAF had been quite controversial, and the trustees wanted to be sure that they should continue with ASAF. We sought advice through a questionnaire process, And we also sought advice from yourselves, and you can see the summary of the advice you provided us back in 2015. We issued a feedback statement at the end of the review. The review was very positive, and there was strong support for ASAF, and there was support for the importance of maintaining the relationships with ASAF. The feedback statement divided the decisions and the recommendations up into two sections. The first was actions the board would take, and then the second were actions the trustees would take. So in terms of the actions the board agreed to do, we agreed to try and target the communications. One of the problems we had in the early days was getting being very clear in the agenda about the advice that we wanted from ASAF members, and giving the ASAF members enough time to go and consult with their stakeholders to collate the views and bring them back. So that really means that we have to get the ASAF papers out at least a month before the ASAF meeting, and we try and get a reasonable agenda out that identifies the advice we'll be seeking from the ASAF members a month, well, probably 6 to 8 weeks before the ASAF meeting, but that does depend on the timing of the meetings. The board also undertook to make sure that we encouraged technical discussions at those meetings. I think in the early days, the group discussions were a bit stifled. People tended to state their opinion. I think now the conversation has become much more free-flowing and much more constructive. But it wasn't without its challenge. And then in terms of what the trustees agreed to do. So one of the big comments we had was jurisdictional issues. Was ASAF only there to discuss what was on the board's agenda, or was it also there to discuss issues that the jurisdictions were having themselves? And the trustees confirmed that they were quite happy for jurisdictional issues to be brought to the ASAF, for the ASAF members to discuss with us. There are a number of other practical things, like we extended the term of office for ASAF members from 2 years to 3 years, and that was following some advice that we needed to keep the membership of the group quite stable so that you can build on the relationships that members build, and that in itself improves the discussion. But there are a couple of items that the trustees decided that they wouldn't make a decision on based upon just the 2 years of operating that ASAF had been in place, but that they would think about them when we did the next review, which is just about where we are. And I'm going to hand over to Sam.
Thank you, Michelle. So I'm going to discuss a little more around the scoping of this review, talk about the feedback that we've received already, and then move on to the questions we'd like to open up to the floor and receive your feedback on today. So as already acknowledged by Joanna, that we are, with this review, focusing on a narrower scope. But that said, there are still the two outstanding points that we'll come to later from the first review. And these points are to consider incorporating ASAF into the IFRS Foundation Constitution, and whether or not consultation with ASAF should be a mandatory step in the due process handbook, also keeping in mind that we are going to be doing a review of the handbook up and coming. Beyond this and these outstanding points, we're also looking at how effectiveness of ASAF meetings could be further improved to aid ASAF in informing discussions of the board and supporting the wider mission of the foundation. So looking at where we are with the current status, we distributed questionnaires to our National Standard Setters contact list in December 2017, and we received 23 responses to those. And as you can see from the slide, it's a good global spread of responses. And with the next steps, obviously we're seeking your advice today. Moving on from that, we will discuss with the Trustees Executive Committee in the coming months and finalise the review and the feedback statement at the full Trustees meeting in June. At which point we will also issue the call for nominations for the next membership of the group. So moving on to the feedback that we received in the questionnaires, it has to be acknowledged it was very positive overall, and it was acknowledged that ASAF forms a key component of the Foundation's wider engagement with national standard setters, and that the previous review has certainly resulted in positive change. That said, there has also been some very useful feedback that has highlighted certain areas for us to consider. Particularly, these are an improvement to the feedback loop to ensure that ASAF is effective in supporting the Foundation's mission. Obviously, as we've discussed already, considering formalising a consultation with the group into the due process handbook, and also perhaps to consider reducing the number of meetings from 4 to 3 per year, but I'll touch on that later. The next 3 slides do focus on a little bit more detail on the themes that we've heard on. So in relation to the effectiveness of ASAF in supporting the mission of the IFRS Foundation, we can see a desire to improve the feedback loop. That's a theme that runs throughout. And also in this area, consideration for members' jurisdictions to discuss specific issues of IFRS adoption in their jurisdictions, and touching on that to perhaps provide greater opportunities to non-ASAF members to present jurisdictional matters at the ASAF. Looking at improving the board's consideration of ASAF discussion, again, feedback loop is very evident here. And this is also the area in where we receive most feedback for us to consider incorporating consultation with the group into the due process handbook. Looking at the effectiveness of ASAF meetings, suggestions that we could reduce the number of meetings from 4 to 3 per year. I mean, we've already had some internal discussions on this point. We'll certainly consider perhaps holding one of the meetings, if we were to retain 4, as a video link, if the agenda lends itself to that. And also, we should consider to seek an overall ASAF consensus opinion to aid informing the board of their discussion. And the final 2 points on that particular slide, again, touch on the idea of improving the feedback loop. So that brings us to the matters that we'd really like to discuss with yourselves today. And as already discussed, this is not the first time that this group has discussed these matters. Back in line with the first review in 2015, there was general support from the Advisory Council for ASAF's inclusion into the Constitution. However, there was more mixed views on whether or not to make it a mandatory due process step to consult with ASAF. So with this review, we're returning to the Advisory Council to gauge opinion on whether at this particular juncture it would be appropriate to incorporate ASAF into the Constitution and likewise make it a mandatory due process step. So considering the first question on incorporating the group into the Constitution, we ask members to consider that such an action will further formalise the status of ASAF and provide greater permanency to the group. Whilst this may restrict the trustees' ability to amend the role of the group and may remove the need for such a regular review process, as we've acknowledged already, which stands at every 3 years. Moving on to the second question on whether or not consultation with ASAF be a mandatory due process step, we ask members to consider that there is already an acknowledgement in the due process handbook that ASAF will be consulted on technical projects. There are also further questions that whether or not to hard code consultation with ASAF into the due process handbook poses. How would we define the projects for consultation with ASAF, and at what stage in a project's life would consultation with ASAF be required? Similar sort of themes to what was discussed yesterday concerning effects analysis. Should acknowledge that we've received some initial feedback from members who cannot attend. That's typically supported incorporation of the group into the Constitution, of ASAF into the Constitution. However, again, more mixed views on whether or not to incorporate it into the due process handbook. Do you have anything else to add, Michelle? So I think at which point we'll hand it over. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michelle and Sam. And Sam has posed effectively 2 questions for us. I definitely want to seek comment, but I'm going to do it, and I was going to use naughty language, but I'll say it the wrong way round, and I'm going to ask you to use your table tennis bats as the starting point so we can get a feel, first of all, and then I'll take comments afterwards. So I'm going to go to question 1 and ask you to raise your table tennis bats if you are supportive of formalising the status of ASAF within the Constitution. Hands up if you agree. Okay, and hands up if you disagree. And I'm deliberately doing that because there will be a number. Okay, so it is not clear cut. However, I think there is a majority for saying yes. So the second question then, and I think as it's important in considering the second question in terms of the due process handbook, as Sam says, there is already mention of ASAP in the due process handbook, that consultation is suggested as opposed to FAD. Do we think that it should be absolutely hard-coded such that there is a mandatory requirement within the due process to consult with ASAF? Those who believe that that should be the case, please raise your table tennis bats. Okay. And those who think that should not be the case, that there should be no further reference in the due process handbook. Okay, I think that is, I would argue, an overwhelming no. Now, I do acknowledge that I probably asked both of those questions in a biased fashion. However, what I'm now going to say, and Sybil, I know you had your flag up, are there any comments on either of those two, rather than just expressing your yes or no view, your rationale for why you thought, and probably for the first question mainly, why or questions around the inclusion in the Constitution? No? Okay, so no further comments. So have you got enough there in terms of who said yes or no, or do you want to ask some more questions to why people said yes or no?
Well, of course, it would be useful to know, but I mean, it was a very resounding response to the second question, slightly more mixed on the first. Any further comments, welcome, but not absolutely necessary.
Yep, Stephen.
Yeah, just a brief comment. I mean, I think my concern is I think that the ASAP is a means of consultation or consulting with a particular constituency group. I think there are a lot of other constituency groups that we consult with, and I'm not clear why this particular one should be put in the Constitution. I'm also a little bit concerned overall about standard setting, because if ISB is setting the standards, what are the actual standard setters doing? And I know this is different in different economies, different places, but what we're seeing is the standard setters are just basically, in certain jurisdictions, rubber stamping. They don't have particularly the same people they had years ago. They've all moved to regulatory bodies or to other bodies. And I just think at this point in time, to actually put that in the Constitution, I'd rather leave it another 3 years and look at it again to see if things have changed. But it seems to me if you've got a world standard, what exactly are the standard setters doing? I think they need to be fairly independent of the ISB, because what they're doing is looking at should this actually be incorporated within their own rules in certain cases.
Suresh?
You know, emerging economies are becoming more and more relevant. Their share of the overall global GDP is becoming larger, faster. And the kind of progressive policy reforms most of those countries are undertaking is pretty aggressive. And their place in the G20 and various other global bodies is becoming more critical, more important. So if you look at a fast forward 2025, 2030, I think that share will be large enough not to be having them as a part of the extended program, and including hard coding them, because the stakeholders coming from that part of the region will be far, far larger and higher. Earlier, we adopted that it would be less disruptive to that extent.
Thanks, Suresh. I'm just going to get the comments from everybody rather than the response to any responses. Henry?
I guess the reason I was not recommending it being included in the first question was it seems that the cause and the issue that's here is actually feedback loop and consultation. I'm not sure the answer of putting it in the handbook resolves that. I think, you know, so I guess the question is, if that's the issue, what is the more effective way of resolving that? And, you know, unless somebody persuades me otherwise, I don't think just including it there automatically resolves that. And I guess I also endorse the comments that Stephen makes, because sort of where does this stop?
Thanks, Henry. Surya.
Thanks, Joanna. I think it's going to be difficult not to include them if the IFRS wants to be a global standard and these are the people who will endorse it in their jurisdictions. We have to include them. And we've seen this issue in the past. But the other comment I wanted to make, and I hope it is just language, there was a statement that said there won't be any further three-year reviews, but I think everybody from the trustees down to our own council gets reviewed periodically. It's just that you would review them in their new form rather than ask this question whether they need to be on the due book, due process or not.
Thanks, Surya. Done, Henry. Linda.
Yeah, I'd echo Stephen's comments as well, specifically on the independence. I would also say there's a time and a place. And when we first started IFRS, there's definitely a time and a place for that because we have to spread the word. But as that word gets down and it's more ingrained in your culture and in your area, then it does define what the role is and the quality of the staff that will be at the local standards setters as a result of that.
Goran?
Thank you, Joanna. Support that the Celia's view on that the hard, to include ASAF as a, in a formal advisory body of IFRS in the due process handbook because, our advisory group is specialized in, more strategic issues, while that the ASAF provides more technical views to ISB. And I believe both are very important and kind of, the two important wheels on the input body to IASB. And so I believe that the inclusion of ASAF as a formal advisory body is quite essential. And regarding the second question, I'm a bit afraid of the independence issue of IASB, ISB have to consult with ASAF, it may jeopardize, or that at least it may raise the, the concern of the IASB independence from the ASAF. ASAF might be too strong, influencer to IASB's decision. But at the same time, that there is a concern over good consultation with ASAF delay the project. I believe that if the majority of ASAF members are not, accepting that or not supporting the ISB's proposal, that may be indicating, there's some problems of ISB's proposal. And all these members of ASAF will issue comment letter anyway. And I think that the ASAF could be used as a kind of a venue to converge the different views of all these national standards to compromise or to make ISB's proposal better or the easier for accept to all these different stakeholders or regions. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Goro. Anne.
Yes, we've been talking a lot about evidence in the past few days, making international financial reporting standards better based on evidence, and I voted in favor because I think this group enables the EISB to know what impact possible standards might have worldwide. So I think they can help the EISB, which is restricted to limited resources, to get a better evidence on standards that are being developed. These people are knowledgeable. They know about their local economies. So that's why I was in favor to include them, because I think they can be a real resource to the EISB. And I don't doubt that they will not be longer independent. I mean, we're also part of the Constitution, and still I think we are independent enough to give our opinions. So I don't see a threat of independence. I think they can be a real resource to the ESB.
Thanks, Anne. Ken.
Thanks. I see the ASAF as being effective and useful and important, but that doesn't actually take me into saying that it should be part of the Constitution. And that may be a cultural thing, in that, you know, I come from a country which doesn't have much of a constitution, and other countries couldn't imagine surviving without a constitution. But I do think the effectiveness of the Advisory Council is dependent on how it operates, more than a safeguard. And it would be safeguarded by its effectiveness rather than by a line in a constitution, which, if it can be amended at will, doesn't seem to me to be a great constitution. To me, constitutions should be long-standing and only amended if there is an important reason to amend it. But it's a cultural thing.
Thanks, Ken. Now, Mary, last word from a board member.
And very much a personal view, and I'm putting Hans on alert that he may just turn off my microphone at some point. It's a point that I think it was very important that you separated the two questions, because as a board member, I have found ASAF very important. I'd say at times challenging, but overall very constructive, very, very helpful. And part of me says it's a bit weird to have this body that we consult with so frequently and so extensively not at least describe what its role is. But there's a very big difference between describing a role and, you know, think about whether or not, kind of to Ken's point, it needs to go all the way to being done in the Constitution or not, and that may be part consistency in terms of what other bodies we describe, versus the due process handbook, not just the practical challenges that are raised, but if we think back to the reputation survey, which is something we've also talked about at this meeting, and the need to balance care and try and improve timeliness, I think the more you write very detailed, do this, do this, do this, the more you take away from standing back and saying, have we done the appropriate consultation and assessment of factors like, concerns that might be identified at national level, et cetera. So I see them as two different questions, which may or may not have the same answer. So I think it's helpful that you took those questions separately, and interesting that we got different outcomes on them.
I think, and I hope you will agree, that those comments have been incredibly valuable, and I certainly have found them incredibly valuable. And just to prove that I listen and analyse, and perhaps I shouldn't have put it round the way I did, on the basis of the arguments that have been presented, your chair has changed her mind. Mm-hmm. And on balance believes that, in fact, it is for the arguments that were put, notwithstanding the acknowledgement of the arguments that were put for, on balance, I think it is probably better to keep it out of the Constitution, but that's my own personal view for the reasons that are there. That doesn't mean you don't use it, but why pick on that particular one? And I focused on, well, what's different then between us and them? And I do think we are the only one that is that strategic advice. It is something separate. And the ISB itself has got the strength in terms of the technical that it didn't have initially. So that's my reason for changing my mind, but as I said, proves that I can listen. I think, though, that is a good discussion. Gives you a feel, certainly, to be able to take to the trustees in terms of helping them to make a decision. And I know that it's not always to get a firm yes or no from this group, but to get the views.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah, that's what's been really important, and there's definitely some different points that I hadn't thought about, the point around independence that a number of people have raised, so that'll be very useful.
Okay, thank you very much, Michelle and Sam. Now we